At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Imola Grand Prix. I won't say the full name, it takes too long. When I say we, I mean just the Chuckle Brothers this week. Ellie Mae has swanned off on holiday, so it's Timo and I, and my girlfriend is floating around in the house at the moment as well, so she has put in some predictions. But Timo, how are you?
You shall be, thank you, Mr. Billington. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I had a fairly busy week already. I spent yesterday driving all four generations of the Mazda MX-5, which is an interesting prospect and quite interesting to put all four of them head-to-head to see which one's best. But results to come on the 19th of June in whatever issue of CCW that is. So pick that up and read about that. In the meantime, though, we ought to turn our attention to Formula One and the world of motorsport. And it's been an interesting little gap for some news to happen in since Miami. And we'll kick off with something relative to this weekend, which is Imola, and it's had some turns tweaked. And these tweaks are indeed good ones. Pirotella, turn 9, has lost its asphalt runoff. Aqua Minerale, turns 11, 12, 13, the section there, has also had their sort of tarmac runoff reduced, as well as Gresini, which is turns 14, 15, has also had a gravel trap added. And, well, this is excellent because it will stop the current racing trend, which is simply to push the guy who's trying to pass you wide so you don't lose your place, or if they do pass you, it's going off track and gaining an advantage. They have to give you your place back anyway. So it's great. We're returning to sort of the track design of old, which I quite like.
Yeah, Aqua Minerale, I think, is going to be most interesting in qualifying, because I think that's where you see people get pushed or push themselves over a bit too much in order to try and get a better lap time. But obviously, when they go off, they don't really gain anything, but there's going to be an incentive to not try and gain anything. Whereas for the racing itself, it's going to be 14 and 15 where the gravel trap has been added that's going to potentially cause the most jeopardy. I think, was it Perez a couple of years ago who kind of bounced along the curbs there, trying to just save it a little bit? And if there's a gravel trap there, he's not going to jump from one curb to the other because he's going to be in the gravel and kick up all sorts of mess. And if there is a bit of a crash there, then that's going to be a lot of clearing up. And Leclerc is going to be hope he doesn't have a repeat of the last time out.
I think I used for one of the graphics on this week's issue, so either check the image for the Spotify, the YouTube, or what's on our Instagram, and it is a shot of Perez bouncing over the curbs at Imola, and it's the shot where sort of almost the whole car has gone four off the floor, such are the height and the impact the curbs around there have. So it's going to really change a bit of the racing aspect. But one thing that will majorly change the racing aspect is potentially a fourth Grand Prix in America. This is all a bit suspect at the moment. It's very uncertain. It's hugely rumor. But reportedly, contracts for Chicago joining the 2026 Formula One roster have been signed. And planning is nearing completion. There is reports of a $4 billion stadium being built too. Rumors suggest that it will be a night race and is going to sit ahead of the Canadian Grand Prix. So four Grand Prix in America strikes me as a bit excessive.
With this, Chicago does seem a little bit left field, but also makes sense at the same time. It's this weird example of where you would add a race in America. There's plenty of other places, but Chicago isn't necessarily not near the top either. And I am all for it, under the condition that it's in place of Miami or on a rotation with it if they insist on keeping it. And we don't really need four Grand Prix then, not when we have zero Grand Prix still in Africa and only one in South America. And I think if it's kind of on par with Canada and timing-wise in the calendar, I'm all for it, as long as it doesn't do what Miami does, where we go off to Europe for a good race and then go back over to Canada. I think if it's going to have to be there, then in Miami off, or have the rotation, but make sure that it is actually making sense in the calendar, especially when we looked at this year's calendar. It's been slightly regionalized, but you know it can be done a lot better, especially the European rounds. But this would be a way of soothing it and in terms of getting us to swallow this particular pill.
Yeah, I think there's a lot still to sort of come out of this one. It is all still very reported, very up in the air, very suspect. But if it comes off, I think we're really going to start asking questions about the overall direction of what F1 wants to do commercially as well. If they're going loads of races in America and we're sort of going, no, barely any of them are good.
I think the other thing with this is that it's yet another street circuit as such, when they've got so many excellent racetracks that would not need too much tweaking in some instances to make them capable of hosting an F1 Grand Prix. And also, I think Chicago is one of these places where you can get away with being in Chicago without people knowing enough about Chicago outside of Chicago to go, oh, why are we not racing in the heart of Chicago? Why are we not seeing specific landmarks? Kind of a bit like Formula E does. It says it's going to Rome, it says it's going to New York, it's going to London. Then it's like, you wouldn't know, though.
Yeah, aside you're from racing on an industrial estate near Chicago sort of thing.
Yeah. Whereas I think in Chicago, you get away with it more because people won't know as much about it in theory. You kind of get away with it a bit more there. But again, nobody asked for it.
Yeah, it's very much come out of the blue, so I do sort of question the validity of it. But it's an interesting talking point. And on a more sort of concrete note, and a very interesting one to sort of pick over quickly, is Natalie Robin, the CEO of the FIA, is leaving her position after being hired at the end of 2022. It's a mutual agreement to pursue opportunities outside of the FIA, and this makes her the fourth high-ranking individual in the past 6 months to leave the FIA. And they're still set to be engaged in a lawsuit by the Wolves over the data sharing allegations between Toto and Susi. It's still a rough time to be the FIA because all of your big people are leaving and you've got to start asking the question, why?
Yeah, it is just an interesting time to be watching the FIA in general and just kind of from a cafe across the road, just sipping a drink and just going, what's going on over there? Kind of that cat meme in the overall, just going, what the hell are they doing over there? Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure yet. I need to look into this a bit more. But like you say, it's the fourth big thing in recent times. And I'm all for a bit of musical chairs every now and again, but usually you can see whereabouts this is going and it's not going for just a full cleaning house situation, because then you literally don't know who could possibly be going in there next. It's kind of when Charlie Whiting passed away, you knew who was coming in after that. And when F1 was sold off, you kind of knew who was coming in there. There was a natural way of, you could see, you could not necessarily know all the specifics, but you had an idea. Whereas this, it just seems like, oh, you're gone. Interesting.
Yeah. Why? And what reason has driven you to do this? It's some interesting bits. We'll see how that one develops, and crucially, who fills in the role. I haven't checked to see if we know that yet, but I'm sure we'll sort of update as it goes along, or it'll be in the episode description if it's out by the time we publish. Next interesting news is Charles Leclerc has a new race engineer. Gone is Xavier Marcos, and in his place is Brian Bodzi. And he's been performance engineer for Charles for the past sort of few years. He's stepping up to now be his race engineer. We've sort of come to understand the dynamic between Xavi and Charles, which is to say panicked most of the time. I don't know if it's someone that Charles elected to have as his race engineer or if it was simply someone he inherited when he joined Ferrari. But this is part of the ongoing shakeup we're seeing Ferrari work at. And I think it ties nicely into the next point in our news, which is Ferrari signing two big names from Mercedes, Loic Serra and Jerome D'Ambrosio. Serra was the former performance director at Mercedes, and he'll be taking on the head of chassis performance at Maranello. And D'Ambrosio is leaving his role as driver development director and taking on the deputy team principal role in Italy. So this is Ferrari being sort of shored up for A, regulation changes to come with that new chassis performance role, and B, driver lineups to come as well, as they look at potentially forming a sort of enhanced junior category. And obviously we've got Ferrari drivers now in Formula 2, Formula 1 Academy, having D'Ambrosio sort of tied with that developing sort of talent, and equally deputy team principal. This is sort of Fred Vasseur looking at a greater picture beyond himself, which is quite promising.
It does very much feel like a prelude to 2026 in a way, with all the teams, not just Ferrari, but a few others as well, getting all of their people together kind of behind the scenes personnel-wise. And Jerome, it kind of makes logical sense in a way. I mean, he was a team principal in Formula E, I want to say, for a little while as well before he went back over to Mercedes in the F1 team. So it's kind of, it's a natural step up, but it's interesting. I'd like to know what his relationship with someone like, oh, I don't know, Lewis Hamilton is like, and how much of a factor that weighed in on the move there. And it just seems, again, Fred just smirking away to himself, doing all these little deals behind the scenes and just going, I'm just plodding along and just smiling away, boys, smiling away.
Yeah, and equally he's doing that with 2025 as almost a sacrificial year to get people installed and used to set up.
I don't think people mind that in a way. I think Lewis knows that next year is the combination of this set of regulations, so there's a chance that some race wins at the very least, if not a championship bid, but it's all kind of, let's just get embedded with the team, like you say, do that in and out, and it's kind of, who else did this? I feel like there was someone else who did this not too long ago, where it was just kind of, we sacrifice everything, not Haas, because that didn't work out, but... Mm.
And yeah, Aston kind
of
Martin
we're just willing to do all this stuff with the eye to the future of let's just get everyone comfortable and then we can deal with the car if that's the issue, but everything else is not the problem. It's kind of a bit like Mercedes now. We've got everything sort of behind the scenes up to a point, and then it's just the car that needs fixing, but everything else we've all got perfectly working.
Yeah, Aston Martin sort of did it a bit when they were starting to sort of pick off Red Bull sort of engineers and things, and reported, I think, Toto Wolff earlier this week agreed with Zak Brown, saying that there's been an influx of CVs from Red Bull to Mercedes and McLaren headquarters, which is an interesting story unto itself. And while at this point it's sort of very word of mouth, it's telling that there are changes happening at teams as both teams look to build up to 2026, and also some people at other teams, let's say, look to secure careers working forwards. We'll see how that one pans out, which is quite interesting. Speaking of teams, we'll touch quickly on the world of Formula 2 and possibly Formula 3. I can't remember if they're in F3. PHM AIX becomes just AIX. It looks like the title sponsor of PHM has been bought out, or the title sponsor of PHM has bought out the German outfit, and it will now be run by the Saudi investment firm AIX. So they're not having a great time of things in F2, from what I can remember.
They're having a better time of it than they did last year, which is something, considering they came plumb last year and scored 0 points in both categories, I think, if I remember correctly, because their car was just nowhere near anything. And this year, I'm not sure if they scored points off the top of my head. I can't remember. It feels like an absolute year and a half since we've had Formula 2 or Formula 3 last. But all I've written for this really is just another day, another Saudi takeover.
Yeah, this is very true. Let's see. PHM currently have 11 points on the board. Their drivers are Taylor Barnard and Josh Dirksen.
Barnard getting those points then, I'm guessing.
No, interesting. Checks notes. They're not on my list. Are you sure? Or is that just not their position in the standings? Oh, no, that's just their position in the standings. They're in 11th overall.
This is less impressive now.
They have 0 points. I read the wrong section in my big spreadsheet. I was like, oh, look, they've gone from 10 to 11. Oh, no, that just means they've gone down. Rough time to be PHM. We'll move on from them. Rough time to be Haas as well, who are now suing Steiner over his Surviving to Drive book. Of course, we mentioned a few episodes ago Steiner suing Haas over copyright infringement and use of appearance for financial purposes and stuff. Now the table has turned, and Haas are doing it the other way around. And reportedly, Steiner and his publisher acted unlawfully in publishing images that the team believes breached trademark rules. In the book, in the image acknowledged section, they do say that if anything is mislabeled that doesn't have credit, they apologize and claim to have approached everyone to whom the images could belong so that they could credit them, and that if any discrepancies are found, they'll happily rectify for future editions. But
don't necessarily know if that covers them legally, though. It just kind of seems like, sorry in advance, but please don't sue us, but it's not enough to stop you from getting sued.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like the sort of clear and sort of legally
binding statement. The one podcast, we don't have our lawyer here, and this is what happens.
That second bullet point, though, is not one of my own. Did you put that in?
Yes, because I've just finished reading said book and noticed that.
Ah, right, then fair enough. Good book, isn't it?
It's all right.
It's an entertaining little read-through. We'll keep our legal eagle Ellie Mae across that one as it develops, and we'll see what happens there. A lot of lawsuits kicking around in F1 at the moment.
It's not what F1 or Haas need, and it's not what F1 need generally with all the other lawsuits flying about the place. It's kind of, it seems very much of like how when anything Andretti-wise happens, there's a convenient story to cover this in terms of like Hamilton to Ferrari or Adrian Newey's leaving and this kind of like, right, what do we do for the lawsuit? How do we cover this? Someone's leaving at the FIA, right, pretty quickly.
Yeah, mind you, speaking of Andretti, Andretti versus Formula One continues, and a probe has been opened by US House Judiciary Committee Chair, what a title, Jim Jordan in the United States into the Andretti F1 rejection. And the quote is, however, when a sports league deviates from its rules and practices in a manner that reduces competition and depresses consumer interest in the...
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Product. The collusion may amount to an anti-competitive conduct. Andretti, as always, continued to work at pace building up its team. So yeah, this one is sort of rumbling on interestingly, especially as the sport potentially wants to open up yet another American Grand Prix, but wants to turn down having another American Grand Prix team.
And an American Grand Prix team. I found just in the Steiner book, he was saying this was back in 2022 when Andretti was kind of having a go back then at opening up talks and saying that he thinks that teams should definitely contribute and not just try and get in on the action while it's hot. And I'm like, again, it feels like Steiner, you've forgotten who Andretti are. And yeah. Like, well, of course they would bring value of just massive amounts to this. So again, it's like, yes, be all for it and yes, do your due diligence and everything else, but this is just another story that you love to see it because it's just kind of, you wouldn't have thought they'd go this far, but at the same time, you're glad that they did because the reasoning that they've been given in the first place being rejected was so preposterous that you're like, well, if two can play at that game, then we can drag this out and keep finding your headlines if you need it because we'll do this and somehow unite the Democrats and the Republicans in an election year. That's when you know it's serious that they've been able to do that. And as you say, in the meantime, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and just continue to work at pace.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of a rebuttal from the fella in charge of F2 and F3. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Who said, you haven't come to us and checked if there's space for an F2 or F3 team bearing the Andretti name. But
that's I refer back to IndyCar where they say this is a lovely problem to have.
Yes, yeah. And yeah, I mean, you're turning down Andretti, one of the biggest names in motorsport of sort of the past 40 years outside of sort of, it's this problem of F1 fails to look outside of itself or outside of Europe, apart from when it wants a Grand Prix circuit in America.
It's the ironic thing of F1 and Liberty lovingly expanding F1 in every way, shape, or form, except in the way that we actually have asked for as fans. It's like, you can have sprint races, we can have modified sprint races, we can have another race in America, we'll have another race in the Middle East, we're going to regionalize the calendar and do all these things. Yeah, but we're asking for a team. You want another race in America?
Yeah.
No. Can we have American team is what I said.
Yeah, you might have misheard me. I didn't say could we have sprints at every race weekend, Stefano. No, I don't want that. Although when Stefano did earlier this week mention making the move to better sounding cars and simply sort of adopting sustainable fuels with the option to sort of improve the fanfare of F1, I quite like the concept of that. This is one that's sort of a horn that's been blown regularly by Corinne Chandock, who says, look, can we just go back to screaming V10s and no hybrids and just fuel it with sustainable fuel? Because at least that way you don't have to worry about the hybrid system and everything sounds good. So at least if the overtaking sucks, it sounds good. So yeah, we'll see how that one goes. But we mentioned earlier about sort of there being crop-ups of news every now and then when they need to cover up Andretti versus F1. Latest crop-up of news is, of course, Alex Albon will be staying at Williams, and he signed a contract extension with the team that will see him stay into the new era in 2026 and beyond. Quote is, the journey will take time, but I'm confident we are building the right team to move forwards and achieve great things in the years to come. So, good move from Albon.
I think so. I'm loving the long-term commitment because he clearly knows something that we don't. And hopefully this means that Vowles is staying too for the long term to help build this project out, like they say. And it makes whoever's going to join him in that second seat all the more interesting now because you know that Albon, he's got to mess up pretty badly to then lose that seat. So he's going to be the benchmark against which everybody is measured. And if you want to come in and be team leader, or you want to try and rival him at the very least, you've got to bring your A game, because he's going to be kind of what Bottas hoped to be and hasn't quite worked out on the same scale, it feels like. And what it's kind of like a younger version of Alonso now in some respects, in terms of the older gentleman helping out whoever comes in, but leading the team in a lot of ways. And I like the fact that in, say, 5, 6, 7 years' time, hopefully it doesn't take that long, but this will be a very nice story, and we'll be able to trace it back to here and go, yeah, I'm glad he recommitted. We know what this is doing now, and at the very least, just see them fighting for race wins and the occasional championship. It's kind of, it's all building towards that, and it'd be a really nice story, and is potentially better news for Ellie Mae with the Adrian Newey business. But I'm still not willing to bet any money on that just yet. But again, it's kind of like we were saying earlier, a lot of the teams are getting their ducks in a row for 2026. And if you keep a driver like that, that you know is going to be willing to do whatever it takes and is committed to slugging it out of the team that has gone a bit backwards this year, and if that doesn't deter him, then if you are a junior and you're looking for a challenge and maybe you want to come full circle, that's something that you just, it's interesting.
Equally, it's that thing of Albon always performs to the absolute limit and sometimes a bit beyond of the car that he's given. Mm. He's not a driver that's afraid to sort of push it and give it a shot, which is sort of great when you're Williams trying to work forwards and trying to find the performance envelope of your car and develop new things. He's a driver you can rely on to really push that. And you look at the driver development he did with Yuki Tsunoda, we saw a sort of huge change in his ability over the course of a year with Alex coaching him on the sidelines. Alex's ability to sort of stick around and train up the new guys coming through, especially if you're Mercedes looking at Andrea Kimi Antonelli, sort of going, well, you're not going to stick him straight in the Mercedes seat. That's a fairly sort of obvious point now. But we stick him in a Williams. Essentially, we get him trained by the same guy that turned Yuki Tsunoda into a fairly solid all-rounder. And then we put him in the Williams and we sort of see what he does, in the Mercedes and see what he does. From Mercedes' point of view as well, you've now got a Red Bull-trained driver sat in a car with your engine in it, which is sort of your junior team, training up your drivers as you come through, but you're not having to really pay him. For Mercedes, this is great as well, when you sort of look at it in their bigger picture.
I think the two bits I want to add on to that is that Albon, and again, early days on this one, but does kind of remind me of Alonso, of Sainz, of Hamilton, in the sense of he, regardless of the machinery he's in, he will give it everything. Whereas you look at someone maybe like Checo, maybe a little bit like Charles, where they're good drivers and they will try a good bit, but you feel like they could maybe have that little bit of extra, and that's where the deficit's coming into it. They've done all that to get to where they are, but now they're settled and they haven't had that wake-up call to keep going. And Sainz obviously has that because he needs to find a seat. Hamilton, he's just hungry. Same for Fernando. And you think Albon's got kind of a bit of both in some ways. He's on this second win for his career, and he wants to prove that he's worthy of staying there. He wants the success that comes with it. So everything he does is kind of, it helps him, it helps the team. So if that means training up three drivers over 3 years because they keep churning them out and they keep going so much, then fine. He knows that he can learn and he can help it and hopefully push it forward so that he can win races, because the team will then prioritize him because he's going to be the consistent driver there. As for Antonelli, I think this is where, as much as I very much have the unofficial official rule of wanting to keep a driver in a team for two seasons at least before deciding what to do with them, unless they're absolutely bloody awful, in which case there's no sense in this. Sargent has certainly, I would keep an eye on Sargent until the summer break, see what is the deal there, and then I would still put Mick in that car, just because that first season with Haas, you cannot count it as a proper season in that F1 car, because there was absolutely nothing there. And he got the first season, and despite what Haas and Steiner and everyone else were saying at the time, yes, he didn't improve as much as you wanted, but he didn't do too badly either, especially when you look at other drivers over two seasons when they first came in. And if he doesn't perform in the second half of the season, fine. At least we see what it goes. And it's like with the Mercedes thing, you know what's going on there. And then potentially you can stick Antonelli in a couple of F1 sessions, maybe Vesti if you really want, just to see what's going on. Because then if you're Mercedes, you know you've got your three main options. Whoever performs the best gets that Williams seat for next year. And then if they have an absolutely brilliant season, perfect. off you go. And if you don't, you stay there, and we'll figure out Mercedes later. But if you do, and we promote Antonelli for argument's sake, Festi's still looking for something. He's still hungry. There we go. We stick him in for 26 and Williams, and now one can just stay and keep going. And he's got relationships with all of these people already because of that Mercedes connection. And it's the best of both worlds of both teams, like you say.
Interesting you mentioned Schumacher because he is joining the test that Antonelli is enjoying in the W13. So I think Mercedes is certainly cooking on something there, but he's also now embedded nicely in the Alpine Endurance Series as well. So we'll see how they get
And
on.
rumors of him going over to IndyCar next year if all else fails in Prema. So.
Oh yes, of course, Prema who are joining IndyCar as well. And speaking of IndyCar, might as well touch on Callum Ilott off the back of winning the 6 hours of Spa for the Hertz-Jota Porsche, is now heading back stateside to go and do the Indy 500. So fantastic times for him, jumping from a Porsche to a McLaren that's looking decent this year. So it's not the
The
best
car
it's
looks
ever been,
decent. The
but
drivers are
yeah,
not looking decent.
the driver lineup is a bit hit and miss. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, it's great time to be Callum Ilott. Anyway, we'll move on from the news, and unless you've got any fun facts about Imola.
No fun facts about Imola, but I feel like I might as well just do this while we just touched on Callum Ilott a second. Nice to see Teo Bottrer getting something because we didn't know where the hell he was really landing after last year's kind of win Formula 2 and then what? And now he's driving full-time IndyCar for McLaren, so he must be loving life.
Is he
And
doing that
obviously he
alongside his Super Formula seat as well?
no, ditched it.
Oh,
He's
completely left the
fully,
Super
as far
Formula.
as I'm aware, he's going straight to, because he wasn't doing brilliantly in the Super Formula, and I think he was given the choice and was like, I'd rather just do IndyCar, which I can understand. And then obviously a quick shout out for Jamie Chadwick for getting her
First
first
podium,
podium in Indy
yeah.
next. And despite just the second race not going to plan, I can happily confirm that it wasn't her fault because it was a gearbox issue. So it was just one of those things. And we know that she's been building up this momentum quite nicely. It seems she's on this 2 or 3 season plan there at the moment of first season, find your feet, second season, do some stuff in the third season, maybe you get that championship. And this is definitely following that trajectory, which I'm quite happy about.
Interestingly, for UK listeners, if you do want to go see some Indy cars in real life, head to the Silverstone Museum. They've got a trio of Indy cars on display there at the moment because the IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, their museum is undergoing a bit of restoration. So they've had to put all the sort of displays into storage. And three of them have been shipped over here. I think there is a 1952 Bentley. There is Nigel Mansell's kart winning championship car and a third car that I cannot remember for love nor money. But yeah, interesting if you want to go see those. Something to do on a weekend when there's not F1. Go and enjoy yourself, enjoy the museum. So we'll move on then to our predictions for the Emilia-Romagna Made in Italy Gran Premio del whatever it is, Imola Grand Prix. And pole position, your prediction, please, Timo.
Because someone I hadn't chosen in a while, and I don't think I've chosen Charles Leclerc in a while, so I decided to go for him. It would make everyone happy, and Ferrari needs something to smile about this weekend, which, I mean, looking at my predictions later on, I have a couple of other things, but it's probably not going to be Charles, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, Ellie May, who is currently sunning herself somewhere on the med, has gone for the fairly obvious answer of Max Verstappen. My girlfriend has gone for Charles, and I'm going to go for the other side of the Ferrari garage and go for Sainz. Because, yeah,
Why
curious. We'll see
not?
what happens. Then we get to the podium. Timo, I'll let you start with yours again.
I'm intrigued with Ellie Mae's choices here because she's basically, I think she's looked at mine going, that's not half bad, but I'm going to be slightly more realistic. Whereas I've gone for the bold version of it, but I'm glad I'm in being inspiration anyway. So I've gone for Max Verstappen in third, Carlos Sainz in second, and then Oscar Piastri in first. Because wouldn't that just be fun off the back of Miami? There he goes, oh, that thing that took you 110 races. Yeah, done it, mate. Quarter of the time.
Done it in like what it'd be 27, 2030, something like that. Yeah.
He just like, oh, how many races has he had? Yeah, I don't know. I don't count these things. I just go and drive.
I wasn't counting.
Plus,
Yeah,
he's going to
that.
have all the upgrades on his McLaren now. So that Lando had last time out, so it'd be interesting to see what he could do there. And we know that the McLaren doesn't do half bad around Imola from previous years. It's kind of been the outlier when they've had an all right car and they've gone, oh, we're on the podium. How's that happened? No idea. Let's not question it. Let's just celebrate.
Yeah, stop asking questions. Let's get on. Yeah, that could be an interesting one. Back-to-back McLaren wins. Ellie
When's the
May
last
has.
time that happened? There's
Ooh.
something to find out for after
Yeah.
Piastri wins on Sunday and we can report that on Monday.
2008. We can probably check that quite quickly here. McLaren F1. Let's see.
Child has been born since then, is in secondary school now. That's how long it's been.
Quite possibly. Let's see. Come on, where are your racing results? McLaren Grand Prix results. Their last back-to-back win. I'm doing a lot of scrolling here.
Thought you might.
Okay. Do you want to take a guess?
2011.
Oh, you're close. You're
well,
very
I guess
close.
So.
2012. US Grand Prix, Brazilian Grand Prix. But Hamilton in America, Button in Brazil.
Well, I can say, yeah, Button, of course.
12 years ago, the MP4 27. That was with the
See,
old.
See, it's meant to happen because it's 12 years. It's nice symmetry, though.
Yeah, the MP4 27 with that lovely silver Vodafone livery. Anyway, where have we got to? That was it. Ellie May, Verstappen, Oscar Piastri, Carlos Sainz. Georgia has gone for Charles Lando Max, which is an interesting one. And I'm going to go for, I haven't written it down, so I'm going to think these up on the fly. I'm going to go for Sainz.
Are you against it?
Verstappen, Piastri, I think.
A lot of Piastri love this week. I'm liking
a lot
it.
Of. Yeah, essentially, I've gone for another remix of yours and Ellie May's, which is interesting. So we'll see how
it's
that
going to be very
out.
Awkward if none of these drivers on the podium, because then we're all equally buggered.
Yes, yeah, it does open up the opportunity for Georgia to score 2 points.
But actually, to be fair, one of us realistically should get at least 1 point because of Max. We've covered the podium between us.
Yes, yeah.
So one of us should, in theory, get something.
Yeah, the likelihood of that. And Sainz has got a pretty good podium record so far this season as well. So there's chances here. Fastest lap, Timo, Sainz until it happens.
Well, like I keep telling you, Imola was the place that he was always going to get fastest lap. And I've just been warming the seat up, as they say, up to this point by going, yeah, he might do it here, but it won't really happen. It's going to be Imola, as you all know. It's going to be Imola where he actually scores the fastest lap of the Grand Prix.
It's a really, really long build-up process to this, but he's going to do it. It's going to happen. Someday
yeah, it's like the next Batman film. There's a giant gap we've got to wait, but you know it's going to be worth it.
When did Carlos Sainz last score a fastest lap?
Let's not look at that.
Let's check that, because it'll be one of those things...
That might take you longer than the McLaren thing.
Let me just check how they've written that one here. Bold italics indicates fastest lap. Bad news.
He's never got one, has he?
I can't see one scanning over his results here.
Yeah, but I might go on with Renault.
No, this is his full F1 results going back to the Toro Rosso days. Let's just go back to the top. Where's fastest laps? He scored 3 apparently previously, but bear in mind that's out of 191 entries. So,
do we know where the last time was? I'm just intrigued to see how big the gap is now. I would have thought maybe Silverstone 22.
No, hang on. Here we go. Right. Not last year. Canada. No, France. 2022. There you go. That was his last. So he's long overdue a fastest lap.
Yes,
his
like
other
I said.
Other one was Styrian Grand Prix when he was at McLaren in 2020. And there should be another one on this list somewhere else. Canada 2022 as well. So there are 3 instances
I'm
of
due. I'm due.
Yeah, long overdue, more like. So it's going to happen. George has gone for Oscar. Ellie May has gone for Lando. I'm going to go for Charles. I think we'll see something like that happen. Wild prediction. Timo.
I'm going Or double points for Williams, because wouldn't that be fun?
It would mean every team has now got points on the board because are Williams the only ones yet to score points?
Salvo, no?
Oh yeah, Sauber. Yeah.
They exist.
Yeah, they do. This is very true. The
Which,
ruiner
if
of
Ellie Mae's prediction is to be believed, it's all going to rest on Joe.
circuit. He's not been round before. He's will have done it in F2, I think.
Yeah,
Maybe.
but it's been a while at best.
Yeah, it's been a long old while since he's done that. We'll wait and see. Okay, double
I was
points for
curious to
Williams.
see about Ellie Mae with saying Bottas crashes. Like, but then it looks like he's only had one DNF this year, and that was a retirement, and kind of that wasn't a crash crash. And he obviously has crashed at Imola once before, which was his fault.
Yeah.
But he hasn't really done it since then. So, or
No, he
before
learned
that.
his
So
lesson.
it's interesting. So it's kind of like, I'll accept that as a wild prediction because it would be out of character.
Yeah, statistically, this is pre it would be unlikely, like Carlos Sainz getting a fastest lap. Georgia has gone for Max hits something. You've said, does that include Horner? I've said, I'm going to go for maybe. It can a physical altercation will earn her that point. And my wild prediction is neither Mercedes in the points.
Yeah, fuck it. It's world enough at this point.
Yeah,
I
I
know.
think they're good enough that they
I'll say
should be in the
they've
points.
had long gaps between not scoring points, and given the fact that Australia was the last time they didn't, which means they're probably not due one for another 10 years.
So I think this is going to be a pointless race for Mercedes, and it's going to be interesting because haven't they sort of got upgrades coming, I think, or are they overdue some? I've lost track of their upgrade pattern, but
Probably bring the Thermonica. It's the place to
yeah.
do it.
Like you always got to bring your upgrades to Monaco because you've really got to figure out what they're doing when you're doing 80 mile an hour.
Exactly.
So that rounds out our predictions and very much this week's episode. It's been a bit of a whistle stop tour, a pretty quick one.
Kind of nice for a change that there's not been too much going on. We can hand just whistle through it and get straight to talking about the actual race that we're going to watch for a change rather than, oh God, what has so and so done there?
Yeah, it's means we can actually look forward to the Imola Grand Prix. I think obviously this year they're going to be 40 anniversary celebrations for the passing of Senna, or no,
I
30
don't know if
anniversary.
celebrations is the right word.
40 years since Senna joined
Yeah,
Formula One and 30-year commemorations since his premature passing. The same for Roland Ratzenberger, of course, as well, who it's important to remember he passed away at the same race weekend. So yeah, it's yeah a poignant weekend, I think, in on the Formula One calendar. But it could
I'm
be an
just hoping for
interesting
a good
race.
race because we've got Formula 2 and Formula 3, and we know they do all right around here. And the World Endurance Championship put on an absolutely barnstorm of a race here earlier this year. F1 in this generation has struggled a bit, and by a bit, I mean a lot. So I'm hoping that that changes this year. But again, who knows? We had low expectations for Miami, and that wasn't terrible.
So we
So
keep our
I think that's the way
expectations
to look
low
at
again.
this.
Yeah, we could be
Yeah.
all right. So that's a perfect point on which to wrap up this week's episode. In the meantime, if you want any more from us, Timo, where can the people find you?
You can find me in the near future over on Is It Fast on the Curves and the Across the Pond Support Network IndyCar podcast, which we've really got to find a shorter title for that because that is a mouthful.
That is a lot of words for one title. In the meantime, if you want more from me, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue is on shop shelves at the moment. It features me speaking with the transport secretary, which is quite a revelation, and a few other interesting bits and pieces beyond that as well. So worth picking up. It's quite a bonanza of an issue for things that are happening. And of course, our shout out for our listeners this week goes out to any of our listeners in Bath slash Bath. Lovely to have you with us. Fantastic city. I've always enjoyed visiting it. And yeah, there's a surprising amount of you that apparently listen to this podcast in Bath slash Bath. So thank you very much to our
Have to
Somerset
hire out the
listeners.
town hall and do a Q&A at some point.
We'll go and do a live episode from Bath slash Bath or an undercut podcast track day at the nearby Castle Coombe Circuit. Anyway, that's all we've got for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the Imola Grand Prix weekend. Be sure to watch Formula 3 and Formula 2 because they are certainly going to bring some action. We haven't seen F3 for what feels like eons, and much the same for F2. So they will be eager to get out on track and cause some chaos. In the meantime, enjoy the weekend's action, and we'll see you soon.